To survive and prosper in this world, man can either make the things he needs and wants, or he can take them. This was true thousands of years ago, and it is true today. To use a modern linguistic framing of this notion, man can either perform work to satisfy his wants and needs, or perform theft to satisfy his wants and needs. There are no two ways about this. Either put in the work to build something, or figure out a way to steal someone else's work. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we have got a great read today. It's funny that we only have great reads on this show. It really is amazing. And you know, sometimes I have to read through some crap, so I hope you appreciate my sacrifice. But we actually have, I believe this is the first piece we've read from the Simply Bitcoin Substack. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. This is the first in a series, actually. But I thought this would be a really fun one to do because, well, it just got me a little amped up. And as have a few reads from their Substack recently, actually. But I think it made for a fun guy's take, so I think you'll enjoy this. This one is on the nature of man, our unalienable rights, how they have been violated through a corrupt monetary system, and why we must proclaim our right to opt out. Before we dive in, I just want to thank the Fold Card for giving me sats back on everything in life. It is only 10 bucks a month just to try it out. Cheaper if you do the yearly, and you get 5,000 free sats just for making an account, just for downloading the app. Go to guyswan.com/fold just to get some free sats, and then put those sats in your cold card so they're actually yours and they're actually secure. I just got a bunch of awesome stuff from CoinKite, and hopefully I'll have a video or something to show it off soon. 5% discount with code BitcoinAudible. And lastly, the stack you need the most is the stack you don't have to worry about stacking. It's the automatic one with Swan Bitcoin. Automatically stack, automatically withdraw to your cold card, set it up once, and your Bitcoin just grows. And you don't have to do anything, which means you have time to come check out the Pacific Bitcoin Conference that the Swan Bitcoin team is putting on. Come hang out with us. There are going to be some phenomenal speakers and presentations. I am getting super, super jacked about it. And guys, 20% off with code GUYS. So don't forget it. Link in the Flowboats. All right. With that, it's time to get into today's read from Simply Bitcoin. And it's titled, Proclaim Your Bitcoin, Part 1, The Nature of Man, by Simply Bitcoin. Proclaim Your Bitcoin is a three-part series that will summarize the nature of man, the current state of man, and the future of man. Part 1, The Nature of Man. Part 2, The Current State of Man. And Part 3, The Future of Man. Man is in a transitional period. In the process of summarizing these three topics, we will view mankind through the lens of monetary policy. Money is often mistaken as the root of evil. This could not be further from the truth. Money is simply a tool that binds and drives societies forward when it works well, and crumbles societies into broken pieces when it is working poorly. And folks, it has been working very poorly for a number of decades, as we can all sense in one way or another. We are in a transitional period. But rather than blast our way out of it, since we have already been through too much shit at this point, we are going to have ourselves a peaceful revolution,
whether the incumbents like it or not. Understanding money and how human nature operates around it is the only way to understand the incentives at play in the game theory for our human actions, which together make up the wild and glorious world we live in. With the fundamentals understood, we can then view our current situation more accurately, and then best calculate how to meld money into alignment with those forces, and use it to supercharge the future for us, our children, and our children's children into a far distant, bright orange eternity. The same forces at work today were at work when the Egyptians constructed the pyramids, the Mongols sieged Baghdad, and the Americans had their Boston Tea Party. And as modern and noble as we would like to think of ourselves and our fellow man, at the end of the day, we are all looking out for ourselves and our families first. If it's a choice between us or them, we bet on ourselves every single time. This is not good or bad. This is simply human nature. So rather than try and break these raw forces of nature, it is high time we acknowledge them, lean into them, and work with them. So throw away whatever contrived programming your well-intended parents, classroom teachers, nightly news anchors, TV sitcoms, and blockbuster movies have planted in those sedated brains of yours. As a child, you were not responsible for your programming. However, as an adult, you have the responsibility to critically think, so turn those beautiful brains on. We're going to expand our minds through a voyage into reality. Buckle up, Buttercup. We're not pulling any punches on this one. Quote, "When I criticize the system, they think I criticize them, and that is, of course, because they fully accept the system and identify themselves with it." Thomas Merton. The constants of man. First, to survive and prosper in this world, man can either make the things he needs and wants, or he can take them. This was true thousands of years ago, and it is true today. To use a modern linguistic framing of this notion, men can either perform work to satisfy his wants and needs, or perform theft to satisfy his wants and needs. There are no two ways about this. Either put in the work to build something, or figure out a way to steal someone else's work. Second, things degrade over time. Chaos and disorder are a constant pressure on mankind. The same harmless drops of rainwater and gentle winds that can cool us on a hot day can also disintegrate the mightiest of mountains over the grandest of timescales. As another example, no matter how bulletproof our computer code might be, the requirement to maintain and run that code on operational computers will always exist. In other words, the order that mankind fights and dies to create is lost to the grand weight of entropy when there is no one left to maintain it. To summarize these first two points, man must work to satisfy wants and needs, and man must defend the product of that work from both thieves and entropy alike. The rights of man. You enter the world with the innate, unalienable right of sovereignty over your thoughts and your actions. Although others may try to control your thoughts and actions, ultimately you have the sole vote on how you choose to think and act in this world. Your short-term and long-term preferences and values change as you age, and as the environment around you changes. Your preferences and values are wholly subjective to you alone. As the master of your mind and body, you have the ultimate decision on operating your life in this world as you see fit, based on those subjective preferences and values that you alone maintain. As the sovereign owner of your mind and body, what you produce with your work is by extension yours and yours alone to control and do with as you see fit. To suggest otherwise is tyranny. This was historically true despite unpaid slavery's existence, and it is true today, despite the modern-day inflationary slavery that persists. To summarize these points, as the sovereign ruler over your thoughts and actions, what you obtain and control through your work can be defined as your, quote, property. And when a thief attempts to take control of your property without your approval, he is violating your rights, which can be defined as violence. In other words, your property is a rightfully obtained thing for you to do with as you wish, and violence is an action of a thief that violates your rights as a man to your ownership and control of your property, whether that be non-consensual taxation, inflation, or the myriad other criminal actions against your fundamental rights of man. The glory and the guilt of man. Technology pushes the price of goods down over time, what is known as technological deflation. Less work produces the same amount of goods over the long spans of time as we innovate. For example, cotton fields that once required armies of slaves for harvest now require just one wage slave with a tractor. Costs go down, prices go down. It's deflation, baby. Without thieves, this is the state of the world. Conversely, organized thieves have historically monopolized, by threats of violence, the three primary activities of money: the sending, receiving, and custody of money. By maintaining monopolies of these activities, criminal thieves can print more money for themselves at no cost, and thereby extract the wealth of those that do not have license to print. This monopolized money printing pushes the prices of goods up over time, as more money is chasing the same amount of goods produced in the economy. We can confirm the growth of money printing by looking at the amount of debt outstanding that the organized thieving criminals, governments, purportedly owe. Increased government debts are an approximation of the increased money printing, because governments and their licensed accomplices, banks, print money by issuing new debts. Just like how you can print money by maxing out your credit cards. I hope you're buying Bitcoin with your credit cards, you beautiful sovereign degens. In other words, although technology pushes the price of goods down over time, money printing by thieves actively violates your property rights and more than offsets the deflationary price pressure of your work by inflating prices year after year, which you can empirically confirm by identifying that the price of things you normally buy have, in general, gone up over your lifetime. To better understand this concept, The Price of Tomorrow, Why Deflation is the Key to an Abundant Future by Jeff Booth is really a must-read. I'll have a link in the show notes. A taste of honey is worse than none at all. The criminal and the immoral act of money printing not only causes prices to rise, it causes prices to rise in a non-uniform fashion. In general, those that control the means of production receive the illicit new money first and decide how and on what to spend their newfound fortunes. Typically, scarce assets are purchased first, things that cannot easily be produced. For example, houses in prime locations or stock and equity in profitable companies are first purchased, which then will increase in value much faster than the prices of other things, like factory workers or the price of firefighters, cops, janitors, farmers, and teachers. In other words, wages increase more slowly than scarce asset prices. This unconscionable reality is known as the Cantillon effect, from the Irish-French economist Richard Cantillon. To learn more about the society-killing abomination that is the Cantillon effect, check out this video. How Money Printing Helps the Rich, from Trader University. Link will be in the show notes. Because wages go up slower than housing prices over a lifetime, and indeed over generations, people need to work more to obtain a home. In other words, your parents, and even more so your grandparents, could work the same number of hours as you, but purchase higher quality or higher quantities of equivalent goods. We can empirically see this because your parents probably could afford college with a summer job, whereas you may never pay off your college debts. Mark Moss gives a great summary of this growing wage and pricing gap in his video, WTF Happened in 1971. With ever-increasing asset prices, the things you want and need become more and more expensive, and this leads to stress, relationship issues, marital problems, drug and alcohol and medication abuse, and a general breakdown of society as everyone is fighting with each other to get their piece of the pie, not realizing that the organized criminals in government positions are the ones destroying everyone's lives and all of society. This is referred to as a zero-sum or negative-sum game, or more colloquially as a dog-eat-dog world, or the rat race. To better understand this, the fiat standard, the debt-slavery alternative to human civilization by Saif al-Din Amous, is a must-read. Weak men create hard times. Printing more money is always the solution for the thieves. As people feel the weight that they cannot get ahead, well-intended politicians that are not part of the organized crime rings are elected on promises to fix the societal breakdowns facing the ever-growing middle and lower classes of society. The fix, offered by the criminals, is more money handouts like Social Security, school debt forgiveness, stimulus checks, etc. And all of this free money is printed from nothing through more debt creation. In other words, the cause of the problem was excessive money printing, and the solution to the problem, offered and pushed by the criminals, is a temporary fix of more money printing. The additional money printing eventually creates even further divergences in wages and asset prices, to the point that the populace begins to consider the possibility that the politicians cannot solve their problems, which they can't, not with money printing, so they begin to wake up to this reality, that the money printer isn't working anymore. And conversely, the political criminals in power, along with all of their crime ring friends in the banking sector and the largest corporations, whom have been benefiting immensely, do not want the party to end. There is, therefore, the need for a scapegoat. Something to blame the problems or deflect or distract the real problems of money printing. Historically, this has been war. When the British political criminals and their criminal banking accomplices were near bankruptcy in 1913, there was magically the need to print more money to fight a war, what the legacy media refers to as World War I. And a more recent example, when the repo market was near total meltdown in September of 2019, there was magically the need to print more money to fight a war, what the legacy media refers to as the COVID pandemic that began in earnest March 2020. Quote, as noted by the early 20th century economist Ludwig von Mises, if ongoing credit expansion is used to delay the final collapse of a boom, then a final and total catastrophe of the currency system will ultimately eventuate. From AdamsEconomics.com. Eventually, this chaos is no longer sustainable. The serial criminals running the money printing theft are out of options and need to roll their current scam into a new scam, while giving the population a giant bath of losses. Read Death and Destruction. In the 1940s, the nations of the world transitioned from a gold standard to a gold-backed U.S. dollar standard on the back of World War II. In the 1970s, the world transitioned from a gold-backed U.S. dollar standard to an oil-backed U.S. dollar standard, amid massive global price inflation and a self-induced Vietnam War. With the rise of Bitcoin, and the very real possibility, read certainty, of its establishment as the new world reserve currency, the organized criminals will need to find a way to control some aspect of it. One way to accomplish this would be a fire sale and a restructuring of internet-based interactions through draconian measures under the guise of safety and a war on, quote, criminal Bitcoin ransomware attackers. Hard times create strong men. Man must work to satisfy wants and needs, and a man must defend the product of that work from both thieves and entropy alike. You have the right and responsibility to maintain control of the product of your work, and although technology creates a better world every day for everyone, thieving criminals actively attempt to steal the fruits of that technology and work. You have the right and responsibility to enforce your control of your property, including first and foremost, the money you earn for your work. The non-consensual theft of those that inflate the money supply is a treacherous crime that must be identified and called out for what it is before it is too late. The criminals have cooked up horrific wars to maintain their criminal operations. With the amount of debt these criminal organizations owe the rest of the world, They will likely try something terribly awful to reset the system and start a new scam, like a central bank digital currency, or CBDC, for example. A complete collapse of the internet under the pretenses of a Bitcoin ransomware attack is all too possible. In part two of this series, we will explore the current sordid state of affairs the criminals have us in and begin to consider the possible outcomes of our current state. Until then, never forget that we must stand up for our unalienable rights. We must proclaim that the product of our work is ours and ours alone to do with as we see fit. Opting out of a thieving inflationary system and into an equitable one of our own making is not only just and right, it is founded in the fundamental decency of mankind and the basis of our societies. Proclaim your rights as a man among men. Proclaim your Bitcoin, or face the consequences.
All right, that concludes The Nature of Man, part one of the Proclaim Your Bitcoin series from Simply Bitcoin, from the Simply Bitcoin blog, or Substack, or whatever you want to call it. I really want to get into this briefly. Unfortunately, I don't have a ton of time, but let's hit our sponsor really quick, and then we will jump in.
Okay, so I was just pausing to do, I have a T-Mobile bill came in today, my cell phone bill, and it took me 8 spins, and I was just trying to see what I was going to get in my spins. I had a number of spins that were about to run out, about to expire. I just got $50 in sats. So it's max up to 100% of my purchase amount, but the T-Mobile bill is like $130 or whatever. I just got $50 back on my cell phone bill while I was sitting here thinking about doing a commercial for Fold. That is 243,465 sats. This is why I use the Fold card, Fold debit card, as my daily driver. I get a spin on every single purchase. I can take 1% base on everything, but I can just straight up win $50 back on a purchase. And do not underestimate how much the small stacking on every single thing that you do matters. I've just got like 12.5 million sats now, like total. And like I said, this is a year and a little bit that I've been using the Fold card. And you can get 5,000 just for signing up, and you get a daily spin for some free sats every single day. And that's just for opening, you just open the Fold app. It's just a faucet. They just give you sats. Go to guyswan.com/fold to check it out. I am going to let my wife know and bask in my wonderful little victory here. All right, let's jump back into the show. Okay, so I haven't read this entire series. I've only read this one, but I've read a number of pieces actually recently on the Simply Bitcoin Substack that I really liked. And this one in particular, I think there's a few things that really hit home in this one that we've completely lost sight of. And I guess I mean that as a society or just a simple common sense. You know, it's so easy to get lost in kind of the economic jargon and all of the cons, like all of these big ideas of experts and the study needs to say a thing. And we've completely just run over it with a tractor and chopped it up. We have just destroyed common sense and fundamental principles, which are both vastly more useful because there's no way to know everything. If you do not have a foundation of how to think about a thing, then you're inevitably just going to be led to the slaughter by people who claim to know more than you do. And the financial system and the government, the political system are such perfect examples of that. One thing that if you don't get anything else, this is so important to understand. And this is an absolute fundamental. It says, quote, "First, to survive and prosper in this world, man can either make the things he needs and wants, or he can take them.
This was true thousands of years ago, and it is true today. To use a modern linguistic framing of this notion, man can either perform work to satisfy his wants and needs, or perform theft to satisfy his wants and needs. Every single time you hear somebody say something should be free, remember this. Nothing pops out of existence for free. In fact, the nature of something that is valuable necessitates that it is difficult to acquire. The only things that are free are the things that no one has to work or do anything to acquire. They just exist in abundance all of the time. It takes hard work. It takes hours. It takes extraordinary amounts of time, trade-offs, extensive knowledge, and experimenting to create anything of value. When someone tells you it should be free, or when some politician says they can make it free, ask them a very simple question. Who are you stealing it from? Because either they are going to do all of the work to create it for everyone, or they are arguing the state should have the power to steal it from someone else. There is no middle ground. There's no fancy accounting that makes this go away. There is no trick. There's no magic wand. There's no political economic manipulation that suddenly makes it so that there's no cost to the thing. And this goes for every single potential, every quote-unquote solution, or everything that government does. When you hear the government is going to rescue the economy by injecting this or that into blah industry or area, they're just stealing it from someone else. It's taken from a different location and redirected to that industry, to that location. In no world can you manipulate the books, the accounting books of a house to move crap around and have more chairs because you just accounted for the fact that you have more chairs. There is no free lunch. The promise of free stuff from the government is a lie. We are currently living through the cost of all of the free crap they have promised for decades. It is not a solution. It covers up one perceived negative that only creates a distortion, papering over the problem. It doesn't solve the problem. It papers over it and actually cements in whatever is causing the problem because it's rewarding whatever the imbalance is by covering up the difference. So if there is actually a problem in the market, when the government comes in and decides to offer it for free or make it available for free and they're going to subsidize or pay for it for everybody, you're just cementing whatever the systemic problem in that market is. Like education, great example. Nina Turner tweeted out today, and it just drives me crazy that education should be free. And we should just pay off everybody's debt. It's like, so you think education is bloated? You think education is overpriced? That it's a failing industry? That it's a problem? And it's exorbitantly expensive for everybody? You're going to cement that price in by offering the government to pay for it for everybody? You don't fix the industry. You don't fix the cost problem. You just suck resources from everywhere else in the economy, and they do this over and over and over again. They paper over a single problem, cement whatever the systemic misallocation is that's causing it, and then they create three problems somewhere else, and they pop up all over the place. And now that whatever the surplus was in some industry that was working or some market that was actually balanced gets out of balance because resources are parasitically siphoned from productive areas of the economy to maintain the gross imbalance and misallocation of resources in education or the other thing that the government thinks everybody should get for free because it's broken. So suddenly we have three new broken things, three new things to complain about, and shockingly, the political apparatus decides that the solution to those other three problems is that the government is going to give it to you for free, or subsidize it, or cover up and paper over the problem in the industry. And thus, we have nine problems. And the cycle repeats over and over and over again until we are here, until we are talking about the collapse of our entire global financial system. It is a feedback loop that moves in one direction until everything is lost. That's why I said in WTF happened in is happening in 2022, the recent chat that we had with Clint and Greg Foss, the cost of everything,
that the government has promised so far, that the U.S. government has promised, the unfunded liabilities, the crap that we have to pay for, or all of our pensions, our retirements, our supposed Social Security, our Medicare, every social safety net that we think we have, those things that we have to pay result in the complete and total deletion of every working adult's contribution to the economy. It is a total socialization of the economy. What you do in the economy doesn't matter because it has to be deleted. It has to be removed by the government because they promise too much free shit. That is common sense. That is so blatantly obvious. It is a fundamental principle and there is no way around it. Anytime the government says they are going to print to fix something, you ask them, how does writing numbers on a napkin fix anything? I cannot believe how stupid people are in this day and age. And understand, you will never explain it to them. There will be some that wake up, but unfortunately, a great fault of humanity is it is not until we hurt that we begin to even suggest we have made the wrong path, especially in a collective sense. That goes double or triple when we're talking about groups of people and group identities and ideas. It takes a collapse for people to wake up and be even slightly sensible about what the hell is happening. And it's crazy the degree of this. You know, we're in one of the most aggressive, technologically deflationary periods in human history. Like, the technological deflation of the last, 50 years is staggering from a historical standpoint. There has been more growth and more people risen out of poverty in the last century than ever before because of the industrialization of the whole world and the globalization of the economy and the free and open trade routes that have allowed the countries to specialize, which we talked about in the previous episode. It is an incredible amount of increased productivity and capital available to everyone. Now, there's still a massive, massive problem to solve. But the market and the technology that we have is actually solving it. And yet, in the U.S., the crazy thing is we have gotten poorer in the context of things we've had for a long time, in the context of necessities. They are more expensive. Only the aggressive technological deflation in computers and TVs and electronics and communications network have we actually gotten wealthier. In houses, we have gotten poorer, much poorer. In fact, in the 60s, it was something like essentially the median price of a house was about 2 years of the median U.S. income, family income. And now it is roughly six times the median family income, the median house. Meaning your grandparents could have worked and saved completely, obviously just using the yearly salary, could have worked for 2 years and bought a house outright. And that same house today that you would want to buy would cost you 6 years of your life. Now imagine you can only save 10% or 5% of your income in order to go to that house. How many years do you actually get? Do you have to work in order to get that house? Guess what? That's the cost of all the free crap you got from government. That's the cost of the constant papering over of our mistakes, of unbelievably corrupt and irresponsible industries that have been rewarded and bailed out over and over again. That is the constant socialist manipulation and micromanagement of the economy by a bunch of self-righteous, arrogant bureaucrats who think they can reshape the world at the end of a gun because everyone, the only reason the world wasn't perfect is because everyone just didn't succumb to their vision of it, that they didn't have enough power to force everybody to make the world that they wanted. I know I've said this a lot of times on the show, but the counterfeiting from the Federal Reserve and the government and the constant issuance of debt through our banking system, debt that is priced equally as money, that is issued as new money and does not carry a liability price, that hides the counterparty risk in the money that everyone is forced to use. There is so much counterfeiting and so much debt that all of the deflationary advantages of technology the increased productivity and the innovation that we have in this economy is completely erased, and we have inflation on top of it to boot. 2% inflation is not merely stealing 2% from you every year. It's stealing 2% plus every single innovative addition, better productivity, and increased base capital that we had through that same year as well. Every single bit of it is sucked up to feed a machine of corruption and waste, and one that is so arrogant, thinking that they're the only people who care about anything when they're the only ones that don't pay the cost of anything. And I think worst of all, in how we have just lost touch with common sense and utterly basic principles, is just the disdain in which basic rights are discussed, and the idea of liberty being this thing of selfishness, that it is selfish to live and breathe per your own rights, for your own responsibility, to have ownership of your life, but it is not selfish for a politician to both own their lives and control yours, force you to live the way they seek to live. That's another good quote from this piece. As the sovereign owner of your body and mind, what you produce with your work is by extension yours and yours alone to control and do with as you see fit. To suggest otherwise is tyranny. This was historically true despite unpaid slavery's existence, and it is true today despite the modern-day inflationary slavery that persists. We are born with unalienable rights. That means that they're owed to you. To ask that the system give you your, or let you have your rights, is a slavery mindset. It's to suggest that you get it from them. You don't. You have them. You take them. They are yours. They owe it to you. You demand it, and you do not have to excuse it. You do not have to explain yourself. They are not your master. You are not their slave. And I really think we have got to pull these arguments and these debates back down to their principles, because this is where they have zero ground. They have no ground to stand on. The very premise of the debate is that they have the right to tell us what to do and everything that we can do with our resources and what we must do with our lives, and that we must debate with them on their subjective reasons for wanting to control us. That's the premise of the debate, and we do not attack that, and we need to, especially as the establishment financial system and fiat monetary system is under collapse. They're going to be so aggressive, and with that as the premise, and things are going to hell, they're going to grasp for total power. That is what a CBDC is. CBDCs are the system for implementing total power, like absolute authoritarianism. If you do not have control over your money, you have control over zero property. You have control over nothing. That's your medium with which to get and exchange everything else. It's an absolute and complete revocation of the Bill of Rights, of any semblance of a document or declaration of any rights that you have from an economic position, from a you own your own time and your own life position. Like the idea that we would be forced into a centralized network that will micromanage every single purchase we do. That's your right to travel somewhere. That's your right to go see your family, to spend time with someone, that they're going to micromanage how much beef you've had. And what's crazy is that this isn't a conspiracy theory. They're the ones talking about this. How great it would be if you could implement this and control what people do day to day and micromanage their decisions. Centrally control your entire life, your direction, your values, your preferences, your purchases, the time that you spend and where you go and who you're allowed to talk to. That's insane. And that is a world that is being legitimately, seriously talked about by people in positions of power who are paying none of the cost for the disaster they are pushing onto us. We need to change the argument. We need to move the premise of the discussion away about whether it would be subjectively good or bad for them to decide how many steaks I eat in a month. CBDCs are not another small step. They are the end game. They are the total... They are the foundation for the system of control over all of it. And they have absolutely no restraint. Not only do they have no restraint, there's not even a place in the way that they argue to suggest they don't have the right to do that to us. We need to stop asking permission. We're not asking permission. Opting out of this mess of a system is our right. I do not debate with someone whose actions upon not convincing me of their side is to force me through government violence and theft anyway. That is not a debate. I will not grant that the legitimacy of debate if at the end of it I have no right to live and build the better world that I hope for my son to live in, that my choice is null and void anyway. We aren't debating. They're just trying to get me to tell them it's okay for them to be violent, for them to be thieves. They want our cooperation, and they are willing to threaten you, ridicule you, lie about you, attack you in the media, purge you from social networks, and censor everything that you say. It is time to stop giving it to them. I'm worked up today. Tired from a long day. Sick of the world's bullshit. I hope you guys enjoyed that one. It was a fun one. We'll close that here. This piece just got me amped up, and I wanted to share it on the show. Simply Bitcoin, actually, their Substack has had a number of good articles recently. So I would definitely check that out. I will have the link in the show notes so you can see the original and a couple of the other ones, as well as the rest of the series. We may hit the rest of the series on the show. I don't know. Like I said, I hadn't gone through them yet, but if we do, we probably won't continue it this week anyway. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening, guys, and thank you to our sponsors, to the Fold Card for my great spin today and giving me sats back on all of my fiat purchases, to CoinKite for the Cold Card hardware wallet, and, you know, just a lot of other amazing Bitcoin products, and to Swan Bitcoin. I really hope to see all of you guys at the Pacific Bitcoin Conference they are throwing in November. It is going to be lit. Links, discount codes, all of that in the show notes. And always also thank you to the amazing Audionauts. You guys are awesome. And it's really cool to have that group. You guys have been a huge value. And it's awesome just to have people to hang out with and know you feel the same way. You feel as passionate about this stuff as I do. Sometimes I feel crazy. But it is time to proclaim our Bitcoin and subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. I will be back with another episode, hopefully tomorrow. Tons of great reads right now. They're just unbelievably long, so it's taking a little while to get them together. But there's some excellent stuff on the way, so stay tuned. Until then, this is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And take it easy, guys. Freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Martin Luther King.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.